tickets, real estate transfers, booze and liquor, passports, and many, many more. My state has a 6% sales tax. Our neighbor to the south, Tennessee, has a whopping 9.75% sales tax on everything except food. Our state and local governments are desperately searching for ways to increase their revenue. Call it whatever you want, it still boils down to more tax burdens on the existing taxpayers. Government leaders claim they want to save jobs and, God forbid, the thought of downsizing government like the rest of the world had to do to survive back in the day. These knuckleheads honestly believe they are doing good. So warped. I have said for decades that America is made up of two kinds of folks. There are taxpayers and there are tax eaters. Never mind about partisan politics. This is what it boils down to. Since America's last financial tsunami, our economy has had a hard time recovering for the good old American taxpayer. Many taxpayers are not better off than they were 10 years ago. Just take a look at what state and local governments have done in recent years to increase their income. I think it is in the state of Minnesota's local government they required an occupancy certification inspection, for a fee, of course, before you could list a house for sale. Here's the headache. They also mandated that no residential property could be put up for sale until after it passed this inspection. This meant all of the houses that needed any kind of repairs, minor or major, could not be listed for sale. I found this out years ago from the inner workings of the back office of the Fifth Third Bank. This bank had a large number of mortgages on homes in that town. When Fifth Third Bank foreclosed on these properties, they simply deeded them to the city because they were not allowed to offer them for sale as is. I don't know if this crazy law is still in effect today, but it was back then. Next up on the bandwagon of local governments generating revenue is a rental property registration. In short, another tax on rental property owners. It requires all owners and property managers of rental properties to register each and every rental property. Failure to do so in my town results in a $100 per day fine on each property not registered. Many other cities and towns in America already have some kind of landlord tax already in place, and if not, it will be soon. Another local tax, not in my town, involves a percentage of your total rents received for the year as tax. The new and trending local tax hitting towns now is the tax on Airbnb rentals, including VRBO and HomeAway. Talk about highway robbery, and our goofball city leaders deny it is another tax on property owners and managers. They try to convince everyone that this fee is paid by the person who rents the Airbnb rental. The annual registration fee is several hundred dollars, requires a public hearing involving your neighbors, and some kind of BS tourism tax to be levied on your customer. Insane! I try to keep my finger on the pulse of what is going on in government in my state and city. You can find me tuned in to our local cable TV show called Gavel to Gavel, where you can watch city council meetings, committee meetings, hearings, budget hearings, and a lot more. Check this out on what I heard myself one day on this show. Several years ago, our city council was smack dab in the middle of their annual budget meeting and hearings. At the time, they were facing a $20 million shortfall. The director of code enforcement department stated during his presentation that each of his 41 code enforcement officers generates over $2 million in fines and fees. He invited the city council to increase his department's budget to allow for 10 additional code enforcement officers. He could take care of the $20 million revenue shortfall. I was shocked because we recently had a meeting with this same director concerning the aggressive targeting and fining of rental property owners. As with any typical politician, he promised nothing and told us he would get back to us. All he did was provide lip service and kick the can down the road. Look at Illinois and California. These states have raised their property taxes along with other taxes so much, business owners and investors have fled their states to land in more business owner and investor-friendly states and towns. Texas has seen a huge boom from folks leaving California. Indiana's economy was catapulted to another level from everyone bailing from Illinois. For real estate investors in states like the two just mentioned, owning rental property is ugly when compared to owning the same property in my town. I have investors from Illinois and California who buy turnkey rentals from my business. My property management company manages their properties no differently from how they manage the properties I own. A three-bedroom, one-bath, 1,000-square-foot ranch in Illinois might produce $50 per month positive cash flow. Put that little puppy on a truck, move it to my town, and this same investor can generate $400 to $500 or more in positive cash flow simply from the difference in property taxes. So stay tuned, get involved with your local investor groups and associations, and take action before the damage is done. It is so much harder and more expensive to go back and try to unravel laws, rules, and ordinances already in effect. Now you should be better prepared to meet your new pain-in-the-butt partners, your state and local governments. Oh yeah, don't forget about your homeowners associations, too. HUD's Section 8 program. Beware. I have participated in HUD's Section 8 program since 1991 or so. Our local government agency, LMHA, Louisville Metro Housing Agency, has gradually become impossible to work with over the past 3 years. Our local agency was one of the agencies nationwide selected for an OIG, or Office of Inspector General, the federal government police department who investigates and audits government agencies to ensure your federal tax dollars are spent and used properly. They make sure these agencies are following all of the rules and regulations required with receiving federal funds. They also have the power to arrest people who have committed crimes for improper use of these federal dollars. In my town, it seems like over the past 3 years, our Section 8 program flipped a switch and began a very aggressive anti-landlord campaign. In years past, Section 8 inspectors had common sense and treated the good and responsible landlords and property managers like people. Today, Section 8 inspectors are worse than the Gestapo. It is not the inspector's fault, but it is because their supervisors are beating them up every day to find violations on every inspection. For many years, my company always passed the initial inspection. My good friends Jay Long and Chris McCarthy always passed their initial inspections. All of us run a tight ship in our property management business. All of us are professional property managers and not slumlords. For the first 9 months of last year, not one initial inspection passed. All three of us had every initial inspection fail. Keep in mind, the tenant on Section 8 cannot move in, nor can you receive any rent payments until your unit passes their HQS, Housing Quality Standards. As you might expect, I got involved with other great investors to find out what the heck was going on. We learned that our local agency was required by HUD to use the 2012 International Housing Code. Unbelievable. What happened to our local and state housing codes? Rental units were failing inspections for things such as dirty bathtub. Believe it or not, this is now an owner responsibility. One burner not working on a tenant-owned stove. Tire tracks, not ruts, in the yard from the previous tenant moving out. If you want to see some of the war stories, check out my Facebook group page called Louisville Landlords Love Section 8. We failed an annual inspection this week. The deadbolt was hard to operate. It worked, it was just tight. The tenant had added weather stripping and you need to push the door in to get the deadbolt to lock. That is worthy of a failure? Really? These inspectors are nuts. A tenant broke a closet door. We removed the broken door. When we did not replace the door, the tenant filed a complaint against us. The city's Inspections, Permits, and Licensing Department, or IPL, did an inspection and found A, weeds over 10 inches, B, an unregistered vehicle, C, bedroom windows obstructed by furniture, D, trash in the yard, E, a missing light fixture globe, and F, the back door obstructed by her kitchen table. And, of course, under Louisville Metro's new and improved procedures, all of these are the owner's responsibility. Louisville no longer holds the tenant responsible. All of the violations listed, even though caused by the tenant, are listed as the owner's responsibility. This creates an interesting problem under KRS 383.705. The statute does not allow a landlord to bring an action for possession after a tenant files a complaint unless the violation was caused by the tenant. By IPL reporting these to be the owner's responsibility, there could be complications if the wrong attorney got involved. Oh, by the way, the inspector had no problem with there not being a closet door. Removing the broken door was the correct thing to do. No need to replace it, as closet doors are not required. Landlord failed inspection. Apparently, I've just been demoted by IPL to housekeeper. I am responsible. House needs general cleanup. Trash, clothes everywhere, and so forth. Owner responsibility. Such lunacy. House flunked annual Section 8 inspection. fixed it. Called inspector for re-inspection. Inspector refused. Said I have to call the Section 8 re-inspection number at 469-6468. Called that number several times. Recording says landlords will be ignored. Only the tenant can call for a re-inspection. Tenant refuses to call. Tenant doesn't have to play their part. Tenant has no motivation. I had an annual inspection fail today. A skinny window adjacent to the picture window in the living room is painted shut. The window in question is 24 inches from the front door. Really? Someone may need to exit through a 15-inch-wide window when there is a 3-foot-wide door on the same wall just 2 feet away? How stupid is that? I'm also quitting Section 8. I'm not renewing the leases for 2 tenants in October, and no new tenants will be Section 8. One of the items I failed for was a 2-inch hole in the wall behind the water heater that no human could access. They wanted me to pull the water heater and fix it. My tenants are very pissed at Section 8. As you can see, our local agency running HUD's Section 8 program is very anti-landlord. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I helped arrange a couple of meetings with our local HUD leadership involving federal, state, and local representatives and leadership. The federal HUD director told us there are no more tenant-responsible violations. All violations are now owner-responsible. This includes a dirty house, dirty bathtubs, and junk or debris piled up outside. Insane! Here is what was happening. You receive an application from a person on the Section 8 program. We process their application the same as any other. Once approved, our office has to complete the forms in their package. The approved applicant then takes their package to their assigned caseworker at the agency. Get this. The agency is open only Monday through Thursday. They are closed every Friday for paperwork. Baloney. Once the paperwork package is submitted, you will receive a notice of your date and time for your initial inspection. Now it is taking 4 weeks for an initial inspection, a full month of lost rent. The inspectors are encouraged by their supervisors to fail every initial inspection. When this happens, the owner repairs the goofy violations. One was failed because of a light bulb not working. Then you pester the heck out of them, calling and calling and calling to get a re-inspection scheduled. This is another 4 weeks out. Now you are out 2 months of rent. That is headache enough for us, but just imagine what it is doing to the poor tenant. Telling their current landlord they will be moving on the initial inspection date and time. Plus making arrangements to take time off from their job for their move, lining up help, truck rental, boxes, packing, utility deposits, kids in school, and so on. Because of Section 8, look how much grief and expense they are causing to the very people the program is intended to help. On top of all this, my resident manager was spending about 75% of her workday dealing with Section 8 issues and problems. After participating in the Section 8 program since 1991, as of January 2017, our company was no longer participating in the Section 8 program. This is sad for the good families on the program. Should you participate in HUD's Section 8 program? It depends. If you live in a large city, check with your fellow members in your local REIA groups. They will tell you the good and bad of your local Section 8 program. I hope our local Section 8 government agency could go back to using common sense. Until then, my company will not participate in our Section 8 program. If you live in Mayberry, USA, a small town, the odds are everybody knows everybody. This means you probably know the folks who work at your local Section 8 office. From what I hear from investors across America, they report their Section 8 program is no problem. Do your homework. Warning. Check your local fair housing laws. In California, Section 8 participants are a protected class. This means you cannot refuse to rent to anyone on the Section 8 program. Resources needed. You must remain plugged in to what is happening in the town where you have rental properties. Join a reputable local REIA group or two where you can get newsletters with updates emailed to you. Section 8. Do your homework first. If you live in Mayberry, you might be okay. If you live in a larger city, it could be the kiss of death. Education, training. Stay current on updates to anything any government agency can ram down our throats. These include EPA things and environmental concerns and issues, crazy updates to fair housing, and so on, and more. Chapter 21. insurance and environmental concerns. Rule 1. Always make your residents buy renter's insurance before you give them keys. Your renter's insurance policy is your first line of defense and protection, and it will help keep your insurance premiums as low as possible. If your new tenant needs help in getting renter's insurance, please do yourself and your insurance agent a favor by referring your new tenants to your insurance agent. This creates a win-win-win benefit for everyone involved. Here's how. 1. Your tenant. You know they will be getting good coverage at a good price. 2. Your insurance agent. Your agent will love you for the referrals. 3. You. You will get a double or triple dose of benefits. Let me show you how. Suppose one of your residents decides to cook bacon naked on a Sunday morning. For whatever reason, your resident gets sidetracked and forgets about the bacon. The next thing you know, your resident has your kitchen engulfed in flames with a big grease fire. Neighbors see the smoke and call the fire department. Your local fire department rushes to your house on fire. They quickly climb on the roof and saw or chop holes in your roof. They use their master key, an axe, to chop in the front door and back doors, and they drown your house with tons of water. If you are lucky, you might even see it on your local evening news if it's a slow news day. Okay, now let's get back to your benefit. Quick review. Your resident started this fire and they have renter's insurance with your insurance agent. Yes. Now you can contact your insurance agent and let them know what happened. You should always congratulate your resident on having renter's insurance, otherwise they could have lost everything. Ask them if they want you to help them by calling your insurance agent for them. They will almost always thank you for helping. Imagine this. Your insurance agent is handling the whole kit and caboodle regarding this fire caused by your resident. Your agent will submit a claim on your resident's renter's insurance and not on your insurance policy. Your resident's policy should cover all of the property damages to your rental house, including new cabinets, perhaps an electric update, roof, and more. Good stuff for you. Warning. Regarding your insurance, please be very careful about accepting your family's been-using-them-forever insurance agent, or worse yet, your 23rd distant cousin twice removed, or an in-law or outlaw insurance agent. My good friend and real estate investor, Ed, the Cuban guy, hired me to attend a meeting with his dad's longtime insurance agent to review his insurance policies, coverages, and premiums on the approximately 30 rental houses he owned. Thank goodness Ed has enough sense to ask me to attend his meetings. I was shocked. Ed was paying anywhere from $1,300 to $1,700 annually on each policy. Ed was clueless he was getting ripped off. He trusted this guy because this agent was part of his family's insurance tradition. Now keep in mind we are not talking about luxury rental houses, just plain, good, simple, 1,000-square-foot, 3-bedroom, 1-bath, 1-story ranches. I informed Ed and confronted his insurance agent about his company's outrageous premiums with piss-poor coverages. After making arrangements with my insurance agent, Ed was able to lower his annual premiums to about $350 per policy, along with raising his liability coverage to $1 million per incident and $2 million aggregate. I think his old policies may have had only $100,000 liability coverage. Ed was able to save over $1,000 per policy every year, and he had better coverage. This does not mean to go out and get the cheapest insurance policies. Insurance companies are no different from any other business. Some insurance companies have a reputation for trying to wiggle out of paying claims, while others are rated as A++++. Do your homework. Ask your seasoned veteran investors in your town if they could share their insurance agent's name and company with you. Your insurance is something you got to have but never use. Years ago, insurance was viewed as your tool for asset protection. I cannot tell you how many veteran, seasoned real estate investors who own tons of rental properties would tell me they're not worried about getting sued because that's what their insurance is for. A few decades ago, there was no Jerry Springer show with attorneys advertising to help me find somebody to sue. Most of the first round of commercials were probably of the personal injury kind. Now, in today's world, the sky is the limit. These attorneys want you to call them to sue big truck companies, nursing homes, personal injury, asbestos class action lawsuits, wrongful deaths, and serious injury from prescribed drugs, medical procedures, and now, yes, even landlords. Recently, something happened in a lawsuit in the city of Baltimore, which opened the floodgates for attorneys to sue landlords who owned rental properties built before 1978. They are targeting lead-based paint poisoning of your tenants and the occupants in their household, especially children. While in Baltimore recently, I got to meet a landlady who has been in the business for over 30 years. She shared with me her company was getting sued for lead-based paint poisoning in one of her rentals. She told me her jaw about hit the floor when her insurance company told her that her insurance policy does not cover lead-based paint nor any other environmental hazards. They let her know she was on her own in this lawsuit and wished her good luck. I felt like this landlady still had the deer in the headlights look while I was talking to her. She wrapped up our conversation stating, "Well, I guess I'm going to have to write a check for $30,000 to make this lawsuit go away." Although I did not want to ruffle her feathers, my thoughts wanted to ask her, "What about your next lawsuit?" It's not if anymore, it is when. Although this is an extreme case, this has already become the norm in the city of Baltimore. If you own rental property in Baltimore, brush up and dig in to learn what the heck is going on. If you do not have rental property in Baltimore, you'd better brush up on it as well, because it will probably be coming to my town and your town in the near future. Big lesson learned. You must understand what your insurance policies cover and do not cover. Do yourself and your business a huge favor and schedule a must-have sit-down powwow with your insurance agent to review in detail all of your questions you need answered. Tip: prepare your list of questions before your meeting. Here are some of the questions you might want to ask your insurance agent at your powwow. Does my policy cover me on lead-based paint, asbestos, mold, radon, and any other environmental issues? Does my policy cover me if someone gets bit by a tenant's dog? Do you still buy real estate if you come across a good deal? If yes, what if you have a property under contract and you want to wholesale it to another investor for some fast cash? You tell your investor to go check out the property. If they fall or get injured while checking out this property you do not own yet, does your insurance company have you covered? How much liability coverage do I have with my policy? I highly recommend $1 million per incident and $2 million aggregate. I have heard about negligence. Can you give me some examples of negligence that my policy will not cover? One example could be several neighbors and your tenants calling you about a dead tree that needs to be removed. You simply ignore it, and then that dead tree falls and injures someone. If your insurance company finds out that you were given notice before the tree fell and you did nothing, the insurance company may not cover you because you were negligent. Another example could be a resident reporting to you that the steps on the front of the house are broken, weak, or in need of repair, and you do nothing. The next thing you know, somebody falls because of the steps, gets injured, and files a lawsuit against you. Odds are your insurance company will not cover you on this because you were negligent. Assuming you are satisfied with your insurance agent, also ask how you can refer your tenants to buy their renter's insurance from your agent. In my office, for example, when it's time to sign the lease and all of the other docs, we require proof of a paid renter's insurance policy. If this new tenant can't produce a paid-up policy and needs help getting insurance, there is a fill-in-the-blank form on our website to make it brain-dead simple. Just fill in the blanks and then it is auto-emailed to my insurance agent and my resident manager. This is saved as a PDF and placed in the tenant's file. Did you know if you call your insurance agent's office and ask a question to see if you are covered for this or that item, your phone call with a question may get flagged on your insurance record as an inquiry, which can hurt your insurance score? This is very similar to getting a speeding ticket or drunk driving charge that would hurt your driving record. That one little question may cause you to be labeled high risk on your insurance record. If you have several questions through a phone call, email, or text, can this result in higher premiums or cancellation of your policies? Ask your agent if this is true with their company. True story. An investor has 10 rental properties. He has an insurance policy on each rental property. Not too long ago, when scrap metal prices were high, he had 3 outside air conditioner compressor units stolen within 2 months. this investor filed a claim for each stolen air conditioner. Because of his three claims, his insurance company canceled all of his policies. To make matters worse, while searching for another reputable and affordable insurance company, he discovered the hard way that he has already been labeled high risk on his insurance record. Behind the scenes, insurance companies share your insurance record just like your driving record. All of his insurance quotes were super expensive because he was labeled high risk. This ain't good either. So the bottom line for insurance is, you gotta have it, but never use it. I view my insurance policies to be used only for big-time tragedies. Years ago, one of my rental houses caught on fire, killing both of the tenants. Long story short, our male tenant, after killing our female tenant, started fires in three places in the house. We can only assume he was thinking this would cover up his murder. Because this home was so energy efficient, the smoke and toxic fumes knocked him out before he could exit the house, and he, too, perished in the fire. Yes, I did call my insurance agent on this one and filed a claim. The estates of our tenants were trying to figure out a way to sue the owner to get money from my insurance company. My insurance company took care of everything and did not bother me with any headaches. My liability coverage allowed me to rest peacefully. My insurance policy did cover and pay for the replacement cost to make this rental house rent-ready again. Of course, all of this was done after their deductible. Never file an insurance claim for a stolen air conditioner, stolen tool, stolen supply, stolen carpet, stolen pipes, stolen furnaces, vandalism, or stolen anything. Pay for this out of your pocket. You do not want to jeopardize your insurance record from these puny claims. Therefore, if you never file an insurance claim for things mentioned here, you can protect your wonderful insurance record. You can also reduce your premiums by increasing your deductibles. When I got started eons ago, I had a $1,000 deductible. Today, most of my policies have a $5,000 deductible, and some have a $10,000 deductible. What kind of insurance policy should I get? As you know, a huge part and the first step in my asset protection program is privacy. This is your first line of defense. Imagine one of your tenants slips and falls on the step out front and calls an attorney to sue you. This attorney, while sitting in their chair, will ask your tenant where they live, your rental house. The attorney will let his fingers do the walking on his keyboard to visit the internet and look up public records to see who owns this property. Their next step is to see what other properties have the same owner. Do you really want some attorney to push two buttons and see everything you own? So what if you have them in LLCs? They will get to see all of them as well. Now you can get ready to blow a gasket. You won't believe this. True story. I had a tenant with a pending eviction contact an attorney stating she had slipped and fell in our rental house and she injured her buttocks or something similar. This attorney called me and explained he was representing our tenant regarding this slip and fall case. Next, he wanted to know what insurance company had insurance on this property. This infuriated me because he should not be given this information to make his job easier. This is private information for my eyes only, or so I thought. Being professional and friendly, I told this attorney I was going to contact my insurance agent and I would get back to him. I jotted down his name, phone number, and email, and then contacted my insurance agent. Unbelievable. Shocking. My insurance agent informs me our state law requires we furnish a copy of my policy or deck page, which summarizes all of the coverages and limits on my insurance policy. This is the law in Kentucky and many other states. Ugh. Now here is where it really gets ugly for you behind the scenes. Once upon a time, way back when I was getting started, my insurance agent would simply add a rental house to my existing homeowner's policy. This happened for the first 3 to 5 properties. At approximately the 5th rental house I purchased, my insurance agent told me I could no longer put these rental houses on my regular homeowner's policy. He said I had to get a commercial policy. I was super excited, proud of myself and my achievements. This grew-up poor kid from the south end of Louisville had built a real estate business so successful that it required a commercial insurance policy. That made me so happy. I was clueless and wrong. With a commercial policy, as you buy more properties, the insurance company simply adds those new properties you buy onto your existing commercial policy. Therefore, you have one policy with all of your properties listed on the deck page. Now, keep in mind your deck page lists every property on this policy along with the coverages and limits for each one. So let's chew on this one for a minute. Suppose you have 25 rental houses on your one commercial policy. You have a $1,000 deductible for this commercial policy. Your liability coverage is $1 million per incident and $2 million aggregate. Suppose you have a double fatal fire like I did, and somehow it was determined the owner of the property, which is you, has some liability. Your insurance company decides to settle this for $1 million to make it go away. Now, remember, these attorneys get a copy of your deck page detailing all of the rental houses you own. This ain't good for you. Because you have only $2 million coverage for the life of the policy, you are now left with only $1 million in liability coverage because your insurance company has just paid out $1 million on the lawsuit just mentioned. I am not trying to be a Debbie Downer or a Negative Nancy by saying the sky is falling. This is real-world stuff I'm trying to share with you to help you protect everything you have worked your butt off for and earned. Now, suppose before the end of this policy, you have another tragedy of some sort. It really doesn't matter what the tragedy is or what the lawsuit involves, but let's say the plaintiff, the person suing you, is awarded $1.75 million. Now what? You only have $1 million of coverage remaining on this policy. This means you get to shell out $750,000 hard-earned cash out of your pocket, or the plaintiff can go after your assets, all of the other good stuff you own. I'm also a hard money lender to help investors purchase and renovate investment properties. One of my requirements before the deal is funded is proof of a paid full-year insurance policy on the property. I recall when a good friend and fellow investor wanted to borrow some money to do a deal. This guy is absolute bonkers about his privacy. He spent a fortune with so-called experts and gurus to hide everything he owns, but he forgot one huge important part that exposed everything he owns. Take a wild guess on what his privacy experts overlooked. Yep, you got it. They never considered taking a look at or tweaking his insurance policies. Here's how I know. He must provide proof of a paid insurance policy before his deal is funded. Well, guess what gets faxed over to my office? His commercial policy deck page. His deck page listed all of the properties he owned, along with the coverages and limits on each property. I quickly saw that he had well over 100 properties he thought were blocked from the public record. I hope you can see how his commercial policy being overlooked became a huge nightmare and just destroyed all of his privacy strategies. Now it's time for your big picture. Hopefully you can now see all of the huge benefits for your real estate business by getting a separate insurance policy for each property. But what if it costs a little more? Is it worth it? I think so. But wait, there's more. Just like the late-night infomercials tell you. If insurance is something you gotta have but never use it, you can drastically reduce your annual premiums by having a sit-down powwow with your insurance agent again. Review your policy in detail, line by line, coverage by coverage, and see what you can whack out of your policies. If you have 24 or more single-family rentals, take a very close look at loss of rents. If you see this on your policies, odds are the cost of this coverage far exceeds any benefit you may get with a claim. As a rule of thumb, loss of rents will pay you up to 6 months of lost rent should a tragedy happen to this single-family house. Now take the annual cost for your loss of rents coverage and multiply it by the number of single-family houses you have, and you will probably see you are better off removing this coverage from all of your policies. When it comes to the cost of your insurance, I have never seen any years when my cost of insurance has gone down. I can almost guarantee the cost of your insurance will increase every year, especially with the rash of natural disasters and the frequency at which they occur. Hurricane Katrina, earthquakes, tornadoes, hail damage, floods and more floods, Hurricane Ike, Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma, along with who knows what is going to happen around the corner. All of the claims paid out to policyholders involving these catastrophes will be passed on to me and you with higher costs for our insurance. Additionally, FYI, my insurance agent told me all insurance companies are pulling their hair out over auto insurance claims. Why? How? In today's world, car wrecks have just skyrocketed because drivers are texting, emailing, and doing stuff on their smartphones while driving. Needless to say, look for your auto insurance rates to keep increasing. Only you and I can understand how hard you have worked, all of your burning the candle at both ends, in addition to working your full-time job. sweat equity, strategizing, education, and your precious and valuable time invested to build your nest eggs. What really sucks in today's world is how many folks want to legally steal your golden eggs from you. Now is the time, before it is too late, to carefully craft your investor's ultimate privacy and asset protection program. I help investors all over the United States by creating their very own custom plan for privacy and asset protection. Just ask yourself now, after learning about all of the exposures you still have, even with insurance, shouldn't you take one more step and invest in yourself to protect everything you've worked your butt off for? Just send me an email to news@mikebutler.com to get all of the details and more to get started. Resources needed. Insurance agent. A competent insurance agent who owns investment property just like you. Ask several successful investors at your next local REIA group meeting whom they use for insurance. Try to keep one insurance agent for everything. It will make your life easier. Renter's insurance. This is a must for every tenant. No exceptions in today's world. Try to get them to buy from your insurance agent and have your real estate company listed as additional insured, just like lenders do on your insurance policies now. Lead-based paint. If your rental was built before 1978, you must use the one-page federal HUD form regarding lead-based paint. It is a simple fill-in-the-blank form. Website. Create a page with a fill-in-the-blank form of basic information as a lead for your insurance agent to write up a renter's insurance policy for your new or renewing tenant. You do not sell insurance unless you are licensed to do so. Chapter 22. Biggest Mistakes of Investors. Before we categorize the biggest mistakes of investors, let's start off with the big three fatal mistakes. 1. Cash flow. No system to keep their finger on the pulse of their business. 2. Property management. No system, at most, using spreadsheets. 3. Bad advice, especially from poor people and wannabe experts. Now let's see if we can categorize these mistakes. Here's some general stuff. Bullwinkle syndrome. A person with a know-it-all attitude. When my daughters were young, my sister called our home. My daughter answered and screamed to my wife, "Mom, it's Aunt Bullwinkle." Oops, the cat flew out of the bag at that point. Why is she a Bullwinkle? Because she is the expert on anything. Just ask her. Super extremist tightwad. Too cheap to invest in yourself. There is no free lunch with super successful investors. Of course, you must live below your means. But if you're busting your butt working your gazangas off, I hope you will reward yourself and your family with the good things you always dream about. Some investors are so damn tight they don't pinch pennies with their hind end. All you barely see are sparks from those pennies they won't let go of. You must invest in yourself, in education, training, coaching, mentoring, health, and systems and tools, allowing you to work smarter, not harder. Most of the super extremist hardcore tightwads who I know seem to never be satisfied or happy. They just want more for free. If you pay peanuts, you get monkeys. It never fails, and it just keeps happening over and over. Sometime within the next 2 weeks, an investor will schedule a one-on-one coaching session for help on the mess they created by trying to get off super cheap. So cheap, it sounds too good to be true. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. These messes happen on a regular basis because the investor tried to get something done for peanuts. It amazes me how these pray and keep their fingers crossed people hope they will get high quality results. Quality people have value. Pay them and treat them as quality people for their quality work. But don't overpay. That's not good either. But if you want good results, do your homework. Check and verify their references and pay them accordingly. Refusing to build your team of experts. This goes hand in hand with both being a super tightwad and paying peanuts. Some investors have a hard time acknowledging and accepting this. When you build a quality team in your business, even if they are just part-time, you will end up getting 2 plus 2 equals 8 results. Here's one of my examples. How many rental houses must I own to have a regular part-time or full-time handyman to take care of all of my maintenance requests, repairs, and so on? I did view this question as reducing my income. This was viewed as a way to work smarter, not harder. It allowed me to focus and concentrate on the things I should be doing in my business. Independent Contractor Agreement. This is a must before you allow or authorize any work to be done on any of your properties. This is a CYA contract for you, and it keeps your nose clean at tax time. It spells out in detail the relationship between you and this contractor. It requires their contact info, social security number or tax ID number, and a valid photo ID. In my business, this fill-in-the-blank form is a hidden web page within my website. No paper. Before hiring a contractor, always get a copy of their insurance declaration page, and you must contact their insurance agent to make sure their policy is valid and current. I have caught many wannabe contractors who have used the equivalent of old-school whiteout to change the dates on their declaration page. This happens most frequently with roofers and tree services. Here's the reason I'm telling you about this. Did you know in most states, even with your properly signed independent contractor agreement, if one of the contractor's helpers gets injured on your property, they can come after the owner of the property? I'm not speaking for all 50 states, but a good number are, like my state, Kentucky. Education. One of the most frequent questions I get is, Mike, should I get my real estate license? My reply every time is, has someone told you not to get your real estate license because of all of the laws and headaches? Most of the time they say yes. Then I ask them if they admire the head that noise came out of, and they say with a sad face, nope, I do not admire that person. Okay, great. Now we're making progress, and let them know that every single one of my mentors and investors who I admire had one common denominator. They all had their broker's license. It might be escrowed, but when they were churning and burning, they had their broker's license. Many investors believe because they own their home, they are knowledgeable about real estate investing. This is no different from playing a game of checkers. Good old homeowners know how to play checkers. But now this investor attends an investor meeting in her town and happens upon a couple of investors talking about a pending deal or a deal they recently made. This new investor listens intently, trying to be a sponge and soak up every tidbit of knowledge she can. As the two investors were wrapping up their conversation about their deal, this new investor asks them, "What's a FSBO?" As you could expect, those investors had a very disappointed facial expression. Investing in real estate is like playing chess. You must learn the pieces and moves before you can play the game. Therefore, I will always recommend you go get your real estate license for the education, training, and access to all of the resources for your business. Do not get your license to chase commissions and listings. Never rent to family, in-laws, outlaws, friends, or vendors. There's just too much at risk. Why are they asking you to rent? Something is ugly somewhere. Yes, you will become their guardian angel, their hero in the beginning. When it goes wrong, you will be labeled worse than the devil. The only exceptions allowed are your own kids. Never swap repairs for rent. Another huge can of worms. Once you allow this to happen, it will happen over and over again. It will. This behavior also destroys the value of your rental property. Always report all income. You will run into old-timers who will brag about putting cash received from tenants into their hip pocket. Here's three reasons why this is a huge mistake. Number one, it's against the law. IRS thing. Number two, it devalues your rental property. Somewhere in your future, you will probably sell one or more of your rentals. If you are selling to an investor, they will probably want to see some kind of operating statement or even tax returns, depending on the type of real estate. Put yourself in your buyer's shoes, and your seller tells you, "Hey, the rental income is really a lot higher because I put all of the cash payments into my pocket." Would you believe your seller? Number three. This is probably the biggest reason. Your actions will get back to your resident manager or staff. When they see you pocketing cash, guess what they might start doing? Yep, you guessed it. It's the old two for you and one for me program. Not good at all. I could go on for a full day sharing with you all of the ways investors have lost money and income from providing opportunities for their resident managers and staff. The more income you report, the higher the market value of your rentals. Not requiring renter's insurance. This is your first line of defense in protecting your rentals from something caused by your residents. I expand a lot on this in the chapter on insurance. This is very important. Never waive late charges. Once you waive a late charge, you have just trained your resident that you do not enforce them. Stick to your guns. I use a daily late charge of $5 a day to protect our 10% late charge. My resident manager does have the authority to waive the daily late charge, but she cannot waive the 10% late charge. When done properly, your residents will thank you for your help in waiving the daily late charges. Not raising rent every year. This will bite you in the butt, and you will lose a great resident because you failed to raise the rent every year. Investors say, "I don't want to raise the rent because they might move." To make this brain-dead simple, in our lease, right on the first page, is shown the 2.9% annual cost of living rent increase for the next 3 years. That's only $29 on a $1,000 monthly rent. Poor record keeping. Whether we like it or not, we live in a society that refuses to accept good old-fashioned verbal or written statements from eyewitnesses. Jump into a criminal court trial with me on a robbery of a business. The jury will listen to everyone who testifies on the stand about what they saw or heard. But what the jury really wants to see and hear are the videos and audio recordings of the robbery itself. This is what you must have in today's world. Proof, not just your words or your scribbled down hard-to-read notes that paraphrase your perception of voicemails and phone calls. Most investors have absolutely no trouble documenting how much money each tenant owes you, but that's about it. Most investors fall short on properly documenting everything in their business. Refusing to accept things that come with the turf. Many investors, especially new investors, have a very hard time separating their personal core values from good, sound business sense. A great example to drive this point is a tenant who contacts an attorney and tries to file a BS lawsuit against you or your company. You know all of the details of this BS claim inside and out, and you have done absolutely nothing wrong. Your insurance company tells you they will take care of this for you and not to worry. Later on, you discover your insurance company paid several $1,000s to your tenant who filed a bogus complaint. Immediately, your knee-jerk mental reaction is, "That's BS. They should not have gotten one red cent," but yet your insurance company blindsided you on this one. Here's the deal from your insurance company's perspective. Should this case or lawsuit have ended up in court, your insurance company will have forked out tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees even if they win. By settling the case now with a few $1,000s out of pocket for legal expenses, your insurance company comes out ahead because this is cheaper than running this whole thing through the court system with a full-blown jury trial. In case you did not know this, our governments, at all levels, do this on a regular basis, year after year. Okay, here's an example of what and where you are 100% in control. Imagine you have a resident who has gone bad and has stopped paying rent for whatever reason you can imagine. You already know the eviction process in your town will end up costing you over $500 in legal fees and court costs, plus approximately 2 months of lost rent on an uncontested eviction process. So let's do the math really quickly. $500 for legal stuff, and with $1,000 monthly rent times 2 months, this adds up to $2,500 really quickly. And this is if they do not show up in court. If they show up in court to challenge your eviction, it just adds more legal fees and more lost rents. Knowing this beforehand, would you be better off contacting your tenant and offer a cash for keys program? An example of this could be, "Hey, Ralph, today is Monday and you and I can both see this is getting ugly pretty fast. You know you will ultimately have to move, and with the eviction process you will not get any help with your moving costs. Here's what I can do for you, Ralph. Get this place broom clean with all trash, garbage, and debris completely removed from the property by 4 p.m. on Friday, and I will give you $500 to help with your move. And there will not be an eviction filed on your credit report and record. Plus, we can part ways in a friendly way." There is no magic formula for the dollar amount. Just use an amount that you believe will work and make it a dollar amount they will go for. That number in your town might be $750 instead of $500. Either way, it is a lot cheaper to do it this way instead of running it through the entire eviction process in court. Now, I can understand how this can really ruffle your feathers because they already owe you money, and now you're going to give them money to move? To the untrained investor, this does not make sense. But to the trained investor, This will save you a lot of money. Resources needed. To avoid the biggest mistakes of many investors, renter's insurance for all residents, period. Effective, efficient office operations, including tenant tracking. Investor Books allows you to push a button to see cash flow now by property and by rehab. Online fill-in-the-blanks forms hidden on your website. Build your team of experts. Education, education. Your education never stops. Chapter 23. The Hidden Tax Benefits, especially if you've got a job. Always check with your expert CPA or tax advisor. This section is my opinions based on my experiences involving this topic. This one topic blindsided me. As a good cop raised in a good old-fashioned traditional family in a blue-collar neighborhood, I did not realize I did not have a clue about how my investment activity would affect me in the income tax arena. Big words like depreciation, tax shelters, business expense, and write-offs might as well have been some foreign language. I was totally in the dark. Looking back today, what was really scary was not knowing any of this didn't bother me. I honestly believed the good old simple math was how the whole investing thing worked. Buy an ugly, broken house at a bargain price, fix it up, and rent it. I thought as long as my rent was more than my house payment, I was doing pretty good, and this was called cash flow. Wrong. Here comes my tsunami. A good thing. If you will, jump into my shoes here for just a moment. Here's this guy, the long-haired, bearded, undercover cop who piddles part-time in real estate and never works any overtime as far as police work goes. The other dozen or so detectives in your unit work all the overtime they can get, along with off-duty jobs, and look forward to tax time every year. They anxiously wait to get their tax refund for their year-long efforts. Many of these guys would get anywhere from $1,500 to as much as $4,000 or more back from Uncle Sam. What's kind of sad today is knowing they didn't realize the IRS was holding their money for them all year long for free. Here's the frustrating part. Yes, I was buying rental property like it was going out of style. I watched my numbers, watched my cash flow, and tried to operate efficiently. What started happening, to my surprise, involved my tax refund checks from Uncle Sam. They didn't come in at $1,500 or even $4,000. I was getting huge refund checks. I'm talking $15,000 and more. How? Why? I didn't understand it. What do my fellow detectives who worked with me think? Here I was, the guy who never worked any overtime, and I was getting 10 times more in refunds than they were. They looked at me like I was doing something illegal. Honestly, I felt like I had done something wrong. I wondered how my CPA could have done this. This just didn't seem right. It didn't make a lick of sense to this kid who grew up by Churchill Downs. Depreciation. Depreciation. The 5-syllable word that works magic on your taxes. Let me share with you what I didn't know. Let's pretend for a moment you're a self-employed painter. You buy your tools, equipment, and supplies. For example, as a painter, you purchase a 40-foot extension ladder for $1,000. You write a check from your bank account to pay for it, and you use this ladder in your painting business. Although you spent $1,000 of your hard-earned after-tax dollars on a new ladder for your painting business, the IRS will not let you write off $1,000 as a business expense this year. The IRS has a schedule or report telling you the life of your ladder is 10 years, and you can only write off $100 a year for the next 10 years in order to write off the cost of this ladder. They might use a term called capitalized expense, meaning the taxpayer writes off the cost over the life of the item. So, if you were to spend $1,000 on a ladder, Uncle Sam says you can write off your $1,000 expense over the life of the ladder, for example, say 10 years. What's interesting about this, as a painter, is after 10 years, what is the value of your ladder? If you can find it. Odds are the value of your ladder has dropped to next to nothing if it's still intact. This same idea goes with plumbers, printers, and folks who have business expenses and investments associated with their making their earned taxable income. Here's what's so beautiful about real estate. Real estate is really dirt and those things attached to it. Houses, buildings, and so forth. Uncle Sam will not allow us to depreciate dirt because dirt will always be here. However, Uncle Sam does allow us to say the improvements or buildings on the land have their own life. You might describe it as, how long will the building last or stand up? Uncle Sam, for whatever reason, has come up with two schedules for real estate. Residential improvements have a depreciation schedule, or life, of 27.5 years. Commercial improvements have a depreciation schedule, or life, of 39 years. So, how does depreciation affect me as an investor? Let's pretend you've purchased a single-family rental house for $100,000. Please understand you did not spend money here. You invested money here. At tax time, you'll ask yourself, what's the value of the lot the house is sitting on? Let's pretend the value is $15,000. Here's what should happen. Purchase price, $100,000. Plus $1,200, closing costs, title insurance, fees to buy. Total of your investment, $101,200. Subtract the lot value, $15,000, from the total investment, leaving a balance of $86,200, which is depreciated over 27.5 years. $86,200 divided by 27.5 years equals $3,134.54. This means you get a phantom expense of $3,134.54 for owning this investment property. The IRS sort of rationalizes this by saying the life of the improvements on this residential property is 27.5 years, and theoretically, at the end of your 27.5 year period, the buildings on the lot are worn out and worth zero, and all you have left is your vacant lot. There's still more. Let's say you make $50,000 a year in earned income, whether from your job or if you're self-employed. This simple version gives you the following benefit now. Your income, $50,000. Minus depreciation, $3,134.54. Your taxable income, $46,865.46. If you're in the 33% tax bracket, one-third of $3,000 is $1,000 savings right now in your income taxes. Let's bump it up a bit. Suppose you have 10 of these rental houses. With 10 of the same rental houses, your income, $50,000, minus depreciation, $3,134.54 times 10 houses equals $31,354.40. Your taxable income, $18,654.60. In this tax situation, the IRS allows you to pay income taxes as if you only made $18,654.60 instead of the $50,000 you made during the tax year. Wow! This can be a huge tax savings. Let's try one simpler scenario. With 20 of these same rental houses, your income, $50,000, minus depreciation, $3,134.54 times 20 houses equals $62,690.80. Your taxable income minus $12,690.80. You lost money. If Uncle Sam and the IRS says you lost $12,690.80 for the year, this means you pay no income tax. In fact, if you have a job and have had money withheld from your paycheck for income taxes, odds are you'll get all of your withholdings refunded to you. This is exactly what happened to me. I didn't understand this depreciation thing. So all of my police officer wages and my wife's nurse salary was completely wiped out with this thing called depreciation. Some folks talk about a limit of $125,000, getting tagged as a real estate professional and getting tagged as a dealer. I am not the expert on these things, but I trust my CPA, Mike Grinnan, to handle all of this for me. He can cite all of the sections of the IRS tax code involved. He's the tax expert. I'm the investor, and he is on my team. Moving on, just to add some icing on your cake while we're here on this depreciation thing, my CPA, Mike Grinnan, also did additional things to benefit me and my family. I might be using the wrong official term here, but in investor language, let's call it a combination of income averaging, both forward and in reverse. For example, because I began acquiring assets pretty darn fast and aggressively, my depreciation literally skyrocketed in a very short period of time. Perhaps in just 2 years' time,